Lake Charles.
Great way to start off the show this week. This is The Exchange, and I'm Cheryl Castile, so welcome. That was a song from the guest we have here live today, Mr. Mark Moe, and that was the Blue Runners from their Island Records release, and that was Love Hound, about 1992, and one of my favorite songs that gets me going to whatever I have to do. So welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about today, and I don't know how much we're going to get in because you have such a great history. But I'm going to tell you about, you know, if we talk about that CD that song came off of, you know, the style of music you were playing at that point. You know, when I moved here, I hated it because I was sick all the time. I never experienced that.
Sure.
I didn't know what sinus. I didn't even know that word sinus. But I was
Welcome.
Sick all the time, and you know, you don't know anybody, so being sick makes it worse. And I remember my husband Blake, you know, said, "Okay, this is what we're going to do. I know how to make you feel better. Let's get your clothes on and let's
sweat
go.
It out.
So we went to Hamilton's Club, and it was white night. And he's explaining whole thing to me as we're driving there.
Yeah.
And then talking about the band, the Blue Runners, which I had never seen before.
For the record, we tried to downplay the white night part.
But it was an interesting part of the history.
It totally is.
Back then, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was I don't know if it was a Thursday night or something like that. But anyways, that was the first time I ever saw you guys.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
And it was
– those are good gigs.
It was very, very cool. And it was something that all of a sudden made me feel I don't know if familiar is because I had a lot of friends back that were musicians. And it just was very familiar to me.
Awesome.
Not that the music was familiar, but just the whole vibe kind of thing. And you ended the whole night with – Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Oh, that was a Halloween night. Oh, yeah. And Robert
and it was,
Robert shocked
us
all.
No, Russ Broussard was in the band the night I saw him.
Yeah.
Because I remember he was on Scrimboard. I remember him coming out.
He might have been sitting in because, I don't know, we went through, there was a phase where John Maloney, the original drummer, and Steve LeBlanc played drums. Mike McBain played drums. All at the same time. And then Russ came in, too, and he would do – and all three of them would play washboard, too, and accordion. So that's what was – that was fun about those days is that everybody switched instruments except for me and Rob.
Yeah, you stayed on.
Rob Savoy. And, I could only barely do one thing. But that was a Halloween show, I know for a fact, because – and that might have been why it was on a Thursday.
Was everybody in – I don't remember people being in costumes. I might have still had a sinus
infection. Those shows are so much fun. And a lot of it goes just to the Hamilton's Club itself.
Yeah, it was
so crazy. I mean, now it's right in the middle of town almost.
Yeah, it was such a – yeah, and back then it wasn't.
No, you had to kind of go in the country.
Yeah, and it was – but, you know, that CD for me then at that point was something that, you know, I just didn't stop listening to. It was kind of my first introduction to something totally new for me. And,
new for us too.
And then life got okay.
I'm glad to hear
that.
Yeah,
life got okay. But, you know, no, seriously, though, I mean, that is true story, though. But, you know, Mark, as I listen to people talk about, you know, when you kind of came on the scene, and with the Blue Runners, it really, you know, and with, you know, really hearing some punk things and all that too, it was a sound that a lot of people around here, I mean, you hadn't heard that. And did you have a sense of that back then, that what you guys were bringing was?
Nope. I mean, it was totally not intentional. We started as a rockabilly band. Just I was so drawn to the earnestness of like the real old rockabilly, and then the Paladins came to town one time, and there was like five people there from San Diego at the Jefferson Street Cafe, which was a wonderful, it was a great club. It was just one of many great clubs, and then we got this compilation.
Was the club?
Jefferson Street Cafe, and it was I forget what it's called now, Sound Exchange or yeah, it's right by where the Times used to be at the end. And so it was perfect. Had a really great symbiotic thing with Grant Street. It set changes with the crowds would change as well, and make that little catty corner walk, and you would easily see, you know, four bands in one night. But then we got this, and I keep saying we. It was me and Steve LeBlanc.
Are we in the '80s?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
At least at that point, that's the '80s. Yeah, and but early, because the heyday was kind of really more in the '70s when I was not supposed to go out, but there's no such thing as checking IDs or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would do that all the time. And then I grew up, I mean, from my junior year probably to when I got into college, seven nights a week there was music in Lafayette. And it's so hard to believe now. But and it was great music, not just like cover bands or anything. I mean, they had some cover bands, but they were awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But so, I don't know, long story. Through X, we would follow this band X. And actually, we would follow this band, Los Lobos, right around the same time. They were on the same label, Slash. So we just ate up everything they did. And then we got this Rhino record compilation that was called L.A. Rockabilly. And so they had Dave Alvin from the Blasters. Yeah. They had Los Lobos. They had Billy Zoom did a solo song, Red Devils, all these great songs and amazing passion and recording, you know. So we learned them all. We learned them all and put most of them in our set. And then the Paladins came to town, you know, and we couldn't believe it. And that really just changed our whole thing. It's like we had seen so many bands play here, but it was like magic, you know, to see Tommy Shreve. You could sit there and watch him play and still not believe it, that he's actually pulling that off. And at that time, there was no, you know, there's no YouTube, there's no internet, there's no nothing like that. You had to really either buy a record or see a show. Mm-hmm. And so it seemed like, to me, even though there was so much music down here and so much talent, that it was, and it was, it's kind of isolated, and it was not following national trends at all. And so when, on that record, on that rockabilly record, Dave Alvin covers Alonzo Lafayette. It's Alonzo Lafayette, but he called it Rockin' Lafayette, and he did it as an instrumental. And it's like, light bulb went off, you know. It's like, wow, they're covering our music, mm-hmm. you know, our heroes from out there in Los Angeles. And then the first EP that Los Lobos did was A Time to Dance, and they had the exact same lineup music as Red Beans and Rice did, sax, guitar, accordion, bass, and drums. And that song, Let's Say Goodnight, could have easily been a Red Beans and Rice song. In fact, I couldn't believe it wasn't. And years later, when I first talked to David Hidalgo, I asked him, I was like, man, you must know the Beans. And he's like, no.
No idea.
He didn't know. And it's a shame because, I mean, actually, the time before last when they played here, they brought up Pat Bro, and it was amazing. And it was like my world's, you know,
colliding. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they have many times over the years now. But it was wonderful to see. And so, yeah, and then they did I Got Loaded on their second, their first EP, no, first LP. So it was a huge connection. And then the X did another band called The Knitters that was more of a stripped-down country-ish band. And so we were just soaking it all in, you know, like we had come from listening to The Clash mainly to this California punk rock, and then all of a sudden they bring us right back to here, you know, and it just had such a huge impact, you know.
And I'm going to take you a step further back, because prior to even some of that music, and you talked about sneaking into clubs, you were also, and I'm assuming you had to sneak in to see Clifton.
Yeah.
Were you of age then or no?
No, it wasn't
the
even
first
considered
time you saw him?
Sneaking.
No. Oh, okay. So, yeah, it was not sneaking. You just
if you paid your $2, you got in. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, as long as you didn't cause any trouble, and I wasn't going to cause any trouble. And
it was like that where I grew up, too. You know, I mean, times were different back then.
Right. And, you know, vehicular homicide. Didn't seem like a big deal at the time.
Yeah, you didn't. That's right.
No, but yeah.
I think with the drinking age at 18, I mean, things were just a lot different.
Totally different. Yeah. And, you know, people weren't aggressive
exactly.
as they are.
That's right.
But
that was also a big influence, for you at that age.
The biggest. I mean, really, between the Beans and Cliff, you know, but also Doopsie and then later Boozoo, Furnace Arsenault. I mean, these guys, like Furnace and Doopsie, I really feel for, because they were really, really good.
Yeah.
And they just happened to be living in the same place as the best in the world at what he did, you know. And like when when Clifton passed, and then Doopsie had that ill-fated ceremony to get the crown, you know, everybody was – it was way too soon. It was really distasteful and everything. But I just – I felt like a poor guy, you know, because he was equally good. He did – he wasn't as – nobody's as good as Clifton. But he had his own thing.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
played the blues on that accordion in a way that was so authentic that it would stop you in – you know, like his kid would come out and do like 45 minutes or whatever, and then – he would come out, and as soon as he would play that first thing, it's just like, holy, that's the real thing right away. And, you know, it would that you remember that movie Amadeus was out at, kind of around that time, and I just like, there it is, you know. There's
that's
Mozart,
it.
And there's
yeah, exactly.
This, the other guy. So I felt really – I just have a soft spot for Doopsie as well. But, yeah, no, Cliff was – I only met him one time, and it was wonderful. He was – totally cool gentleman, and made me feel at ease. And then I had another chance to meet him at Grand Street during soundcheck. And I don't know why I was there during soundcheck. I had no business. I wasn't a musician. I don't know what I was doing. But he was at that time. He had had his amputation, you know, and he was kind of sitting on the side while the band and the engineer guys were getting it together. And he looked over at me, I guess because I was the only white guy there, and like, why am I here? But I swear he wanted me to go talk to him, and I just couldn't do it.
Huh.
You know, he was like, he was giving me that look like, it's cool, you can
come over.
And it was just, it's Cliff, and you can't, I couldn't.
Yeah.
I wish I had.
Yeah.
But
you had the look, so that's good.
Yeah, it's good enough. And he didn't know me from Adam. He was just like, he wanted someone to talk to, someone to go, you're the coolest. You're amazing. You know, and I don't blame him.
You know, and I always wonder if I'm remembering this, but I don't think I am. You know, when you bring up Furnace Arsenal, he played like in the 90s or something. He
mm-hmm.
There was like a truck stop or something right off of I-49, you know, that had like a lounge or stuff
yeah.
in it. It was before all the casino kind of stuff
right.
came in. And
probably,
but
yeah.
I remember him having, I thought, like a standing gig there that he
probably
would do
so.
At, you know.
He was a janitor, and I know at a school, like an elementary school, and there was two great things about it. I mean, he was a great musician, great player, so soulful, and he played a really kind of a stripped-down version of what Doopsie, and even more stripped-down than Doopsie, but it was still on a chromatic accordion, and he wore one of those rings that have the extendo for your keys, you know, it had
oh,
that
sure,
little,
yeah,
and
yeah.
it would retract,
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Man, as soon as I got in a band, I got me one of those.
Yeah.
And I wore it for years and years because I was like,
it's cool.
I just thought it was the coolest thing. He wore khaki pants and these, it was basically his uniform for school.
Yeah.
But I was like, this cat. And he wore his hair in a bun. And it's just like,
that's right.
How can you get cooler than this? You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And but I never saw him other than in town. Like I didn't, for whatever reason. When we started touring, we'd miss him. You know, like he had just been there, or whatever. St. Louis a lot, Midwest a lot. You know.
Yeah.
He was wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Then jumping back to what you were talking about, then when you guys kind of thought, okay, let's. Maybe here's a direction, whether it was that
mm-hmm.
thought or not.
Mm-hmm.
The songs coming to you at that time, you know, your writing style, you know, I'm curious about – because there's still things that you have written after that's more – that still has that same kind of sound in there. You know,
psychosis.
No, yes. No, and I mean that in you know, in a good way.
Thanks.
Although that's part of what I want to talk about. Like that comment you just made, there's a part of you that seems to feel a bit uncomfortable with some of the style or the songs or no?
Just we knew nothing, you know, and I can only speak for Steve and I, Steve LeBlanc and I, because when we met, if we hadn't met John Maloney and Rob Savoy, they had been in the Rockin' Shapes for several years, and they knew a lot more about how to be in a band, how to,
okay.
You know, we went literally straight from in our rooms listening to our records 24/7 to, you know, first time I sang on a microphone was at a gig, you know. Huh. First time I went to a studio was to record the Island record, you know.
Wow.
We were – there was no shade of green, greener than we were.
Yeah.
So it's not that I don't really have any ambivalence about it. It just seemed totally natural.
I didn't realize that. That makes sense then. Okay.
Yeah, and we were petrified, man. I mean, not Rob and John so much. They enjoy their personalities are such that they really enjoy being in the spotlight and being at the party, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't, and I didn't. And so it worked. It was really a complimentary – it was a great complimentary relationship because they would kind of do the entertainment that you have to do. And then we would kind of just load the music up. And I mean, they had contributions to the music too. I mean, John's Ramblin' was one of our big songs for a long time. But that's kind of how it worked, and it gave me an out. Like, I didn't have to carry the whole thing. And if I had, I wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. You know that, but that makes sense that you have, and I don't know John, but I know Rob, and mm-hmm. pretty extroverted. I mean, he's out there.
Man,
and
yeah.
That is a nice balance when you can have somebody pick up the slack for those mm-hmm. parts that you're not comfortable with.
Oh, he was so great. I mean, he was so great for the band as a mouthpiece, like just around town. He knew so many people. Again, you know, this is before email or, you know, we'd have to hang flyers or literally make these little monthly gig cards that we would mail out that would usually at one point it was costing more than we were going to make at the gig to mail those stupid things.
Yeah.
So he was great. He got the word out about the shows.
Cecil, I'm going to have you just get ready for on Le Grand Bleu for track 4 for Kankton. We'll get that one ready when we take a short break here. But, you know, your whole time, the Blue Runners still exist in some way, whether it's you guys are doing a reunion thing or,
sometimes.
You know.
Yeah.
But that was how long of a period for you where that was pretty consistent?
20 years, you know. That's all I did for 20 years. And, I mean, I joke that I was in a bunch of bands called the Blue Runners because we went through members like crazy. But the original guys, I think, you know, it was only like 4 or 5 years. And then my cousin Willie Golden and my accordion player, one of my best friends, Adrian Huval, came on. And they had been in the band the rest of the time. So it was like 15 so something years, and you know, those poor guys never got the credit that they deserve because they were always, "Where's Rob? Where's John?
Okay.
These are the new guys. I don't know these guys." But they, you know, they were awesome, and they're still. I still rely on them for so much, you know, musically and just as friends, you know.
Well, let's listen to, this is a cut from the CD Le Grand Bleu, and this is Kankton.
I'm kicked in.
Kankton. And if you just joined us, my guest in the studio today on The Exchange is Mark Moe, who we've been listening to a couple tunes, actually, from the band The Blue Runners. And this is KRVS 88.7 FM, public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette here at Cypress Lake Studios. Please check out our website, krvs.org. A lot of great programming, great podcasts, and we really appreciate it when you hit that donate button and help us along. You know, Mark, actually one or two, five shows could be, you know, Blue Runner stuff.
Just because I talk so much.
No, you have, like, great stories. You know, it's interesting how you have – because that was really – and I hear it from musicians that I know, you know, since I've lived here, that what an influence, you know, that band that you guys had on
yeah. I thought you were talking about the time we came up, because we were so influenced by all the bands we were just talking about. Yeah.
No, I was giving you, you know, that was a compliment people were giving
Thank you.
Okay. No, but, you know, seriously, because it was something that a lot of people hadn't heard locally.
Right.
And then a mixture of all of those influences that you were hearing.
Yeah, it was so crazy because we got quite a nice following here, and we were completely surprised by that. And then it got stupid big, and yet we were never in any circles. Like, I didn't know any other musicians at all. I just knew the four guys that we played, you know, that I played with. And that was not such a good thing. That turned out to be kind of stupid because, you know, you need to network, you need to, and I hate all of that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I like meeting people and I like shaking their hands and whatever, and finding common ground and stuff. But yeah, we didn't have any advocates for us other than, like I said, like Rob would do a pretty good job, but Steve and I had no interest in it. And Mike McBain as well, he came on very early too, and he didn't have any
Mike's in the Zordico.
Yeah, that's what's
too.
Wonderful yeah, yeah. about that. Yeah, him and Aide are like from two different eras of the band. Of the Blue Runners are in the Stompers now, and that's been wonderful, reconnecting with Mike in particular. I always stayed in touch with Aide. And then we have Dave Moore on bass, who hadn't played a professional show, and I loved
– So how'd you find out about him?
I just met him. He had let's see. I had done a blog for about a year and a half, the Daily Mo.
Oh, the Daily Mo, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which was ridiculous. And he was kind enough to make us an app, an iPhone app, which I didn't know what either one of those were. And but Jill, my wife, was like, "Oh, this is great. This is awesome. Look, what a nice thing." And then later I met him at shows, and he had expressed interest in – he played. He's always played, but he hadn't been, I guess, in a
band.
He
made an iPhone app for
– the Daily Mo.
Oh, for the Daily Mo he did yeah. it. Oh, very cool. Okay.
Yeah. I wish I'd kept it going, but man, that daily thing, that's every day. And
it might have been better with the monthly mode.
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually did start calling it the every now and again day or every other day.
What did that, though, add to your, you know, to your creative spirit or your, like, artistic drive doing
it's
that?
It's fun. I mean, it was super fun, but then it got super depressing because when you really follow Louisiana – and all I did every day was wake up and do a Google search or, you know, I had a bunch of Reddit, whatever, searches for Louisiana. And, you know, you get your, bizarro stories of that are funny. But then when you watch the politics and you really see the as those results come out of how far behind we are in, like, all the big stuff, health and, you know, infant mortality, education, blah, blah, blah. All the bad stuff, we're like top 10, top 3, sometimes number 1. And then the thing that broke my spirit was the BP spill. And I just couldn't take it. You know, every day it would just get worse and worse. And by this point, I'd really kind of had a real connection with the readership. You know, people would write to me, and so I felt like more of a part of the community, which I was really awesome. That's why I got into to music in the first place, was to try to find some way to get into the community. And I just felt so bad for us. But I would get so angry with us because we keep voting for the same cats who did that, you know, who would sell us out. That's another thing. Since I'm on my soapbox.
He can go, right, Cecil?
I'll stop. But
no, we're kidding.
It totally, from the 70s, when I first started going out to now, it's gotten so conservative and so square, you know, and just so limiting. And even though I love, like, there's really great bands right now, like you were talking about, young guys who've been playing now for, maybe they started as kids, you know, mm-hmm. and just incredible music, Fofolé, Brass Bed, Carbon Poppies, I'm really interested in them. And I'll be honest, I'm just like I stay at home so much, but it's just when I hear what I hear on Cecil's show, it's just so interesting to me, and other bands too that I'm probably gonna forget, but there's just a shame that, you know, as great as the Blue Moon is, it, you put 100 people in there and it looks like it's packed, you know, and then everybody goes high fiving themselves and patting themselves on the back, and it's like, man, that's really not, that's just making the bubble so small. Whereas, you know, you put 1,100 people at Grand Street or, you know, on a whatever, then you're like, you feel like you're doing something. And even that small, I mean, you're still just here in town. And people forget that when you go out from here, they don't know Lafayette. They don't know Cajun. They don't know nothing. It's like, oh, you're from Louisiana. That's New Orleans. What's like New Orleans like? And so our perception, I think, of ourselves is so distorted.
I think it's changing, though. I think there's a lot of positive things that are changing with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much positive. I feel bad about even bringing up the negative. There's this preciousness about the whole thing that drives me crazy. And I guess that's because coming from punk rock, that was the antithesis of punk rock.
Yeah.
And it's like, as much as I've really love the culture and I love this city, and I, you know, I should have moved to New Orleans a long time ago to work, you know, and to play for people who are in the business who can get you out of here, get you on the road. But I'm not. I'm from here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can only see how much we've lost, you know. All the great musicians, but also that spirit of just like unpretentiousness, just getting up there and throwing down, and no place had air conditioning, no place was, you know, and the covers were so cheap and it was accessible to everybody. And I'm sure I didn't talk to many people when I would go out, but I'm sure there was guys, you know, who knew. Just like now, no bands you've never heard of and can't wait to drop names and that kind of thing. But it just didn't feel like that, you know. Two things. I remember it was so common to go out every single night to see a band that I was at Grand Street one night, and it was packed, stupid packed, to the point where you could barely move. And I'm like, who is this band? And there, some guys like, that's the Meters, and I'm like, I didn't even look at the marquee. Like, I don't know if I'd ever looked at a marquee to see who was actually playing.
Yeah.
You would just go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, the Meters, that's all right, you know. And there was a million things like that. And it seemed like there was more camaraderie, but it's just wicked now. I mean, it, with all the good stuff, and it's just what it is, you know. There's mm-hmm. no change, and there's no going back. I just don't remember people being quite as proud of themselves all the time. And I mean, it kind of makes me think sometimes, like, you know,
maybe it was just a way of being before.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody even discussed it. It was just a way of being.
Right. Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, man. I mean,
that was just.
And look, you just went with your $2 or whatever. And I never heard anybody complain about a cover. All these things that are just like commonplace now. And I don't blame them, man. The covers are ridiculous, you know. But I understand the clubs are struggling to stay in business too. You know, there's just, I don't know. I can't explain it, but it's like ever forward. That's what it is now. And the idea of, like, you know, self-promotion. Like, here I am on a radio show talking about my music. You know, I'd rather slip my wrist a couple of years ago than do this. But that's what it is now, self-promotion. I wanted to come out. That's pretty nice.
That was the only way we could get him to come on, is we promised him.
Actually, I was promised something else, and I haven't heard it yet. Don't make me say it. Don't make me say the biblical term. Thank you.
There you go. Life is now good.
Thank you. Yeah.
But you know, Mark, I mean, I think there's you know, and you and I mean, we're about the same age. There is, which I didn't know. I thought you were quite a bit younger than I was. But, you know, we're at a different age, and things are different. Mm-hmm. And so it's finding – I mean, I think it – you know, you talk about getting back to some of the basic things with performance and performance art, you know. Mm-hmm. I look at what this group Wonderlust Theater did last week, where they took theater back just into this open lot,
right,
in the middle of town,
yeah,
in Lafayette.
That's super
and
cool.
And talked about it. It was very accessible to anybody, and I hadn't experienced something like that. That was just a very cool thing, just to, you know.
Well, you know, I know we talked to you and Blake about it, but that performance that Dickie and Sonny did at the museum. I mean, I haven't been that moved by music in years, and I wanted to go. That is not my crowd. That's not my scene at all. But I made myself go because I wanted to see them not in having to make people dance or be in a festival thing where they could just do their thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, man, did they pay off, I mean, way more than I could have ever expected. And it reminded me of those days where nobody had to tell you this is going to be a good show to get you to the show. We just went. And I think sometimes the audience is so now, because everything is so categorized, that they really are hurting themselves by not just letting the musicians do their thing. Now, granted, you know, musicians could be super indulgent, self-indulgent, right? But, you know, it's just so limited now. I mean, you know, and it's like that's a shame, because I think you're, you know, I look at a guy like Chris Stafford. Or, you know, so many people, so many great musicians here. And it's like, I wonder if he just could do anything. Maybe he's doing exactly what he wants to do. I mean, Fofolé is amazing. But just, what if he just played guitar all night? You know, I would just love to hear some of these guys in different settings. And girls. I keep saying guys, but everybody, you know. They're just like, it was way more, to me, it was cooler when it was less virtuoso based and more emotionally expressive, you know.
Yeah.
And
more natural and less of a happening.
Yeah, you know. I mean, but that can. I mean, that can still be. That's still happening. It's not to say that people aren't expressing themselves. But you know what? Okay, here's the thing. Here's a beef.
And then we're gonna cut to a Sam Ray song, Cecil, just for you to get ready.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I'm talking so
no,
much.
No.
But the thing of, you know, this French speaking, you know, it's such a wonderful thing that it's the French immersion, and, you know, you can go to St. Anne's if you can afford it. But we fought, like most of our career, that's like, we're not authentic Cajun. And I had never heard that until, like, this guy from Australia came to my house and asked me, it was a reporter, like, well, what do the purists think about your music? And I'm like, it had never occurred to me. And then little did I know that would be like the theme of the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. Who are you making angry? Who are you? And I just like, man, you know, I'm playing for my peers. I'm trying to be in this community and make – and the, we're having a good time. I don't know why that would be a bad thing. And I always, you know, I got my Cajun culture mainly through my grandmother on my mom's side. And my mom and my dad cooked. He did all the cooking from my dad, from his father-in-law, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm a totally Cajun. I'm a Mo from Boudreaux and LeBlanc's.
How much more could you be?
Right. And the idea that I wasn't. And then it just makes me wonder. It's like, you know, I love this French music. And we would take the time to learn it and write it. You know, we'd learn the songs and knew what they were saying. And we would teach ourselves to write the music in French. But it's like, you know, if you go to 7-Eleven right now and order in French, you're going to be standing there a long time, right?
Now, in some of the small communities.
Not in the small communities, yeah, but I'm talking about Lafayette. Yeah, yeah. And that's what I was – that's kind of my thing. It was like at some point the musicologists or sociologists would have their criteria of what culture is. And I'm just living proof that it's not true, man. I've had this conversation with Zachary Richard too, who I respect a lot. Language, when you preserve something, right, it stops growing, it stops moving. It's like this buddy of mine used to say, it's like that horse in the jar of formaldehyde in the chemistry class, you know? Perfectly preserved, not doing a damn thing. It has to keep moving.
Gotta let it live.
And it seems like, but you see, like tourists don't pick up on that. So, and most of us get paid now, unfortunately, by tourists. So it's this weird catch-22 where you're kind of constantly looking back nostalgically and blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, I want to go forward, you know? And I'm as guilty of it as anybody, because it's just I just get tired of it. It just beats you down, you know. But anyway, soapbox over.
And on that note, let's play Satellite. Let's play Ooh. Sam Ray. We're gonna come back and talk about Sam Ray and see what that moved you into, Mark.
1, 2, 3, 4. It's not time of day. Satellite lights coming in through the walls, dialing me up, sitting in on my calls. And all the clocks, they're going house to house, block by block. You know I'll be there.
every mark, every scar. Satellite lights are robbing me of my soul. They're robbing me of my soul. Me of my soul. Me of my soul.
Absolutely love that song. That was Will Golden on banjo, too. And that was Sam Ray, which consisted of Mark Moe and Will Golden. And if you're just joining us, today's commentary has been brought to you by Mark Moe.
No,
no, I'm kidding.
I'm not putting my name on any of that. But you know what? I got to say, too, after Will left, Michael Juan Nunez played with me, too, as Sam Ray. And that was really cool, too. I just didn't want to leave him out because he played really well.
That's I mean, there's more talent too in his little fingertip than.
Jeez, no kid. I mean, really. If we went down the list of, I was thinking about that. All the people I want to mention is too many. I mean,
yeah.
Everybody's so good.
You know, now you had gotten from that EP that you put out, Sam Ray. You guys also got. What, you know, I know whatever, but it's a cool thing. You got nominated. It was for the International Music Awards as a blues, one of the blues
really?
Songs. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Really?
How do you know this?
Because it was on the internet. Well, I don't know if it's true. You guys, I mean, it talked about it was like the 9th annual International Music Awards, and
that's so cool.
And it showed that. I don't have it sitting in front of me, but
I'll tell you what, it didn't get. That would be perfect. That would be a perfect Blue Runner, Sam Ray, Zorko Stomper thing to happen, where something really nice. We don't hear about it, and there's no money.
But there was a picture of you and Will.
You got to be kidding me.
No,
wow.
I'm not kidding you.
I don't know that.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's
look
awesome.
It up, and then, you know, you can use it in your promotional material.
No,
so what do you think about is there plans to continue to do some of the Sam Ray?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the best things about getting back with Mike is he set up a studio at his place. Oh, and I got to say, too, Ivan Kosanin has been huge in Sam Ray, getting that to sound right, and Honey Slides and then Tony Daigle before that too. I mean, those guys are such great resources here.
Yeah.
But they're also expensive, and and so without any real like touring or without having a bunch of dough just laying around, Mike set up a studio at his house.
No, who's Mike?
Mike McBain.
Oh, that's also in the – okay.
Yeah, he's a drummer for the Stompers. And
But he was a guitar player, though.
Yes, yeah. He's an excellent musician again. I mean, just one of these guys that can do any bass, drums, like so many folks around here. But he's really special, and he's a great producer, you know. And anyway, the opportunity came up that we could do a Stompers record there, we could do a Sam Ray record there. And I'm actually working with Ashley Champagne right now, too, a singer and writer who's...
How do I know that name?
She played with Walter Pierce and was in the... the band. I'm gonna
space I know you're talking... Okay.
And she sings quite a bit, and she's super talented. We had no idea she could write so well. And... She reminded me of myself when we just had this burning desire, you know, to express ourselves musically. It had to be music, and didn't have a clue how to do that.
Yeah.
And so when that's what attracted me to her project, and she's written some songs in the last month or two that just completely blow my mind. And if we can capture them on tape, you know, or whatever, on digits, that'll be amazing because she deserves to be heard. She's incredible.
And so the Project Samurai, mm-hmm. I mean, that can – you see that kind of going in a number – whatever direction.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those things that
– Yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, what's happened is we kind of have to do the weird stuff that I write on Samurai and the more – the less weird stuff on the Stompers thing because I'm just sick of it, of fighting not just with the whoever, just sometimes at the gigs, you know? It's like you just kill a gig by playing your favorite song that you wrote. Even if it's acoustic, it's like kill the dancers and you may not get them back. And I'm just like, oh, the hell with it. You know, we'll just do this to get that side out.
And that's, you know, there's a number of bands who I have heard speak to that, you know, around here that, you know, you do some of those gigs out there, you're playing for the dancers, yet that's not necessarily what makes you the, you know, the happiest to do, but you find that balance.
Ironically, when it's a dance, I love it.
You do.
I think the Blue Runners always love doing them because they pay good and you're like of service, you know, and you know what you're doing going into it. And I love those gigs. Plus, by 3 hours, you know, the groove gets so thick because it's essentially the same rhythm, you know. It's super fun. I really enjoy them. My thing was at a club date or at a festival, those dance troupes would come and then they want you to do.
Got it.
And it's like, it became, I remember the last one we did, we got chastised for playing too much Clifton. And it was just like, what? Because it wasn't Zydeco enough.
Sure.
And it just, you know, again, my head just turned inside out. And I didn't know what to do with that. So, and I'm not saying The Stompers are still probably going to be too rockin' or too something for somebody, but
people can decide that Saturday night, huh?
Yeah.
At the Blue Moon?
Yeah, I hope they do. Well, don't decide too much because
– just come out and have a good time.
Yeah, just have fun. Yeah. And with Sweet Cecilia, too. We played with our last gig with them there, and they almost made me cry. They were so good. And so –
that's some voices.
Yeah, man, it's just like so – soulful. That's the thing that I'm thinking I feel like is missing, and that's what I found with that Dickie show and Sonny. Yeah, they're virtuosos. There's nobody better than them, but man, so much soul, you know? Like, you knew Dickie was from Cecilia, even if you never met him, just by hearing him play. And that recalled the time, like, the generation before me was so smart. And so, like, they were all the best journalists. Like, the Times was, like, a really interesting thing to read. And we looked up to those guys. I did, anyways. And I think a lot of people did. And now, you know, then when music, when KG Music and Zydeco Music kind of got national, it became about eating crawfish and getting drunk and all the cliches of what, you know, people think about Cajun people and Creole folks, you know, and it's just like, I had no interest in, I still have no interest in that. I want to write about what, you know, for what I'm going through, what it feels like right now. I mean, you know, we have two computer programmers in our town, in our band. Another guy is like smartest cat I know. Aide, you know, was growing up in Grandbois. He spoke French first. He breaks every cliche. And then people walk around like, no, this is what a Cajun is, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Please. The culture's awesome. It is awesome. But when it swallows up the individual, that's where I have a problem, you know.
Yeah.
And I can never really get easy with that. I can't.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see where you go from here.
Well, I'm pretty old, so.
You're what?
I don't think I'm going far.
I'm probably
going to earn somewhere.
I don't think so. And I hope that you keep producing to put on recordings that we can all continue to listen to and stick in our players and our vehicles and at home. And
that's awesome.
You know, that's
I need to give a shout out to David Egan right now.
Yeah.
Because I know everybody's thinking about him, and I just want him, if he's listening, to know how big a role he plays in this community and how loved and respected he is. And I hope he gets better real soon.
Very much. With you on that. Everybody, go check out the Zydeco Stompers Saturday night, the Blue Moon. I think Mark's going to be sitting in with Jason Harrington again, too, on Sunday morning at the Blue Dog. Cecil, press a button, and whatever comes out, comes out. Everybody, have a good week. It's been Mark Moe.
Thank you.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life. And is this news?
I didn't always want to go to the senior center because I have arthritis and my arthritis began to hurt. And I didn't want to go there and play bridge. It was much more fun to go shoplifting.
Bringing you all the parts of the world that don't fit into the daily news programs. Go out of your way for it. This American Life from Public Radio International.
7 p.m. Wednesdays on KRVS.
This is Bob Gushereau inviting you to tune in to the music of yesteryears every Tuesday night at 7. We'll listen to music from the great composers from the first part of the last century, done by performing artists then and the contemporaries of today, with a variety of music from my library and the library of many of my friends. That's the music of yesteryears, Tuesday nights at 7, right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.